must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everybody. In this extended Radical Rant segment, we've got a live guest joining us here in the studio. My friend Teresa Daniello has flown in from Ohio. Hello, Teresa.
Hey, Ross. How you doing?
I'm fantastic, and even better now that you're here.
Well, thank you very much.
You're very welcome.
Oh, Portland is such a beautiful city. Your airport is gorgeous, and what an easy flight it was tonight from Ohio.
We have the best airport and the best mass transit, I'd say, of any American city. I fly around a lot, take a lot of mass transit. I will brag Portland up every single day. Now, Ohio, oh my goodness, we got a lot of things going on in Ohio, but I know your background is you've been working with families of these sick kids who, you know, are in the most desperate need of some sort of protection. Tell us what's going on with your world in medical marijuana there in Ohio and what you're trying to work to help these families.
Well, in June of last year, I was asked by some of the families to come back to Ohio to help protect them from the amendment groups. They didn't want their children exploited for anybody to win an amendment. So I stopped working nationally, and I came back to the state of Ohio. And it's been a real challenge. As you know, there's a lot of activity. There's a lot of newbies.
When we mean amendment groups, we mean there's Responsible Ohio with their amendment. There's OTEP. Mm-hmm. There's ROC, Responsible Ohioans for Cannabis or something. How many are there?
Well, I think there's four right now.
Four amendment groups. And three of them working for REC and one for medical? Or is, how's that?
Well, I think all three of the ones that are working for REC also have a medical component,
okay.
But Ohio Rights Group is strictly for medical.
Yeah, and Ohio's kind of an interesting situation in that you don't have any medical at this point. Every other state that's gone for legal has had medical first. So these amendment groups are trying to patch a medical and a REC at the same time. And meanwhile, you're working in the legislature trying to get this done. Tell folks about that.
Well, first, Ohio is a very different state when it comes to amendments. Really, when I first jumped in, I was the executive director of a political action committee, and I went through and read the Ohio Revised Code and the Constitution. And what I recognized was, as long as the summary matches the ballot language and you get the signatures, you're on the ballot. It really is just that easy. So in other words, if it says in the summary, Teresa gets free pot at every store, and the ballot language says Teresa gets free pot at every store, and we get 305,000 people to sign it and it passes, I get free pot at every store.
I would sign that ballot.
Thank you.
the Teresa gets free pot at every store act of 2015, I'm all for it.
Well, maybe we'll do that in 16, okay. You know? but because of that, it can be problematic because what we're looking at right now is really skipping over the medical and going right to REC. And medical is really taking a back seat. Mm-hmm. What I've learned since I've been involved in this industry in 2011 from National Drug Policy Reform Organizations is that nobody is really focused on educating Ohio's legislature about medical cannabis. So when I came back to the state of Ohio in June, I started focusing with the families on educating the legislature. And that's what we've done. They're really listening now.
And I was mentioning off air how the legislature here is kind of in a similar situation to what we did to our legislature in Oregon. When we had our 2012 amendment that failed, we went to the legislature and said, hey, look, pass this thing or else somebody's going to put something on the ballot you don't like. Well, turns out they went and changed it anyway. But that's kind of a similar situation. You could turn to the Ohio legislature and say, hey, guys, look, you got those four amendment groups out of there. If you pass something at the legislative level, you take the wind out of their sails a little bit. Is that going on?
Oh, absolutely. They're listening. They're absolutely listening. And you know, from what I've been observing, Russ, I have not been doing this as long as you and as long as a lot of the veterans who have been doing this. And again, thank you so much for all the work you've been doing for all these years and holding the space for those of us that are newbies coming in. I mean, I'm a newbie for five years and can even imagine how many newbies are coming in now. And it's crazy. I forgot where I was going with that.
About how you've got this leverage on the legislature now to be able to put something together in a statute rather than an initiative.
Well, when I initially started educating the legislature in 2013, I started with a cabinet level member. And the way I approached them was just strictly talking about the endocannabinoid system, talking about the endocannabinoid system in addiction, the endocannabinoid system in schizophrenia, the endocannabinoid system in, I mean, you name it, right?
Yeah. And talk about, you know, educating your legislators. We were speaking to a doctor, the doctor who wrote the book Stoned, Dr. David Cassaret. He came from mainstream and then had a patient bring him some research, you know, educated the doctor. And he was telling me that, you know, about 7 out of 8 doctors don't even get education on the endocannabinoid system in medical school.
Oh, no, no, no.
Much less the legislatures.
Well, it's less than 14% of medical schools that even, and that was the first information that I took to the cabinet people. And I started showing them, hey, this is a biological system. Let's skip medical marijuana. Let's not even talk about cannabis. Let's just talk about the endocannabinoid system. Yeah. And I really caught the attention of a couple of very conservative Republicans. And I really stuck with them. You know, when I first started, again, this journey that I'm on, I attended the Patients Out of Time 2012 conference, and I learned about the endocannabinoid system. And about 3 weeks later, I attended the Republican Party campaign manager training. So when I was at that training, I met, of course, a lot of people, and I think it piqued their interest that there was a girl in there.
And isn't it remarkable that, you know, we could go through and have doctors not know what an endocannabinoid system is? It's like your mechanic not knowing a transmission is.
It's completely illogical.
How can you not treat the person?
As a matter of fact, I was just on the airplane next to a neuropsychologist, and he barely knew anything about the endocannabinoid system, but he is going to the Medical Cannabis Institute to get the education.
Good.
So, you know, you talk to everybody about it.
We spoke to, I also spoke to an attorney in Tacoma this weekend, and he was talking about how he has to talk with the legislature and try to convince them and educate them, and how they have these misconceptions. Like he said, one of the legislators said, well, 99% of medical marijuana is recreational anyway. It's like, gee, where did you pull that number out of the department of your ass? I mean, what is that coming from? Yeah, there's some people abusing it, but it's nowhere near a majority.
Well, you know, I went to Tennessee a couple of months ago with Jacqueline Patterson. You probably know Jacqueline.
Yeah.
And we saw some propaganda that was being passed around. And, you know, that was some of the information that the propaganda was passing around. Now, again, we're blessed because I've been really working hard at this since 2013, educating our legislature. We just got a bill for Ohio Families Can out of Legislative Service Commission.
Oh, good.
Yeah, it's a wonderful bill. There's another organization, which is our sister organization, called Ohio Patients Can. Ohio Patients Can has a comprehensive medical marijuana program. It's a phenomenal program that was crafted in 2011 by some national drug policy reform players and some people from Ohio. And I just went over it again. It's a phenomenal bill. But again, that's a comprehensive bill. And taking a state from where we're at now, which is decrim, you can have 100 grams in Ohio, you get a $100 ticket. But taking us from there to a comprehensive program, you know, it's a little much for anybody to jump into. And I don't blame them for not wanting to jump that far. I mean, I hope they do. Yeah. I really hope they do. But our organization, Ohio Families Can, has a 4-year pilot program. And I'm very pleased with the way the Legislative Service Commission crafted this bill. They obviously did their due diligence. I don't know who is in our Legislative Service Commission, but they did a phenomenal job crafting it. They're working with the American Herbal Products Association for standards. They set up a merit-based application process that's going to be crafted by the Department of Health. It pulls in research universities. So, you know, I'm pretty excited. It's we know that the legislature leaders are reading it. They're reading both bills, and hopefully they are going to move before November. You know, we need to do something. You know, here's a number that I discovered while, you know, in my journeys. It was provided to me by Rainbow Babies in Cleveland, and that's 5% of our state-funded Medicaid program are catastrophically ill children. But they're using approximately 50% of our total state-funded Medicaid dollars on their care. So really think about that. First and foremost, what the hell are we doing to these kids, right? And then secondly, if it's such a large number, it only makes common sense that if a half a grain worth of cannabis oil will reduce seizures from 1,000 a day to potentially 1 or 2 a week, not only are we going to help save the family unit from a lot of pain, but we're also going to save a lot of taxpayer dollars. And that's really what the legislature want to hear. They want to hear numbers. Mm-hmm. And that's a very big number. That's not only a number for the catastrophically ill children. Once we're able to start providing the cannabis oil to the MS patients, the ALS patients, and everybody else that will benefit, I absolutely believe our state-funded Medicaid dollars will go down.
Yeah, there's no reason to not think so. I mean, there's every indication would be that you'd be saving money. We're speaking with Teresa Daniello. She's in from Ohio. And what's the name of your group, Teresa?
The organization I work with is Ohio Families Can.
Ohio Families Can. And we had a question from our chat room. Speed Limit wanted to know, what's more influential with these legislators, medical promises of cannabis or economic promise of cannabis in general?
From what I've been communicating with them, they really do seem to understand the compassion. They mm-hmm. really, really do. So first we talk the compassion. We show them the children. We introduce them to the children. We try not to make, we really don't put the children in the press. I really want to make sure that I stress that. We have over 60 families with our organization, and you do not see children with catastrophic illness in the press in Ohio.
Yeah, I was noticing that. I mean, when I was following this coming out of the first states to pass the CBD oils, almost every state named their act after a particular kid that was kind of like the poster child in the legislature. And that's not the case in your state.
Oh, we don't have a CBD bill because people in our state already knew about the endocannabinoid system, and it's completely illogical to pass a CBD only bill when there's CB1 and CB2 receptors.
Well, that's good. So that was my next question was, a lot of the medical marijuana has gotten more and more restrictive over the years to the point where it's CBD only, or you're not allowed to grow your own plants, or it has to be non-smoked forms. Mm-hmm. Any of those restrictions?
You know, we are dealing with people who are just learning. You know, mm-hmm. obviously you and I know a lot. A lot of people that are in are listening to you know a lot. The Ohio Attorney General's office is just learning. The governor's office is just learning. The president of the Senate just learning. Speaker of the House just learning. And for some reason, inhaled cannabis, smoked cannabis scares them.
Yeah.
And okay, well that's all right. But when I remind them that Kathy down in Florida has ALS and smoked cannabis helps dry up her throat.
Kathy Jordan, by the way.
Helps dry up her throat, that perhaps we should not exclude it, but we should look at the scientific research and then make an educated decision. Mm. Now, I do have to tell you, Ross, that yes. I'm very proud of something that's happened with our organization.
Okay.
We have a lobbyist.
Oh, good.
Our lobbyist is the former chairman of Health and Aging for 30 years in both the House and the Senate, Len Watchman. Unfortunately, one of his family members' children has Dravet syndrome. Mm. But because of that, he has had an open mind, and he has been able to learn about the endocannabinoid system and really jump in to understand what's going on with CBD only, what's going on with children's medicine, be it working with Haley's Hope, or Charlotte's Web, or any of the other strains that are out there. And I think that, you know, one of his words to me were, we don't need a monopoly for anything. We don't need a monopoly for strains. We don't need a monopoly for anything. We need to make sure that our patients in the state of Ohio are able to be taken care of with whole plant medicine. And to have a conservative Republican who's been in both the House and the Senate for 30 years come out and say this, mm-hmm. it was a very proud moment for me.
Wow, this is good news coming out of the state of Ohio. The legislature there sounds like they're starting to get educated and are willing to look at the possibility of a statutory medical marijuana law for the state of Ohio. And of course, we've got the other things going on in the state of Ohio. You've got the Responsible Ohio thing on the ballot for 2015. You got groups that are still fighting to get on the ballot for 2016. How does this all play out? I mean, if you get what you want out of the legislature statutorily, could these amendments end up wrecking it?
You know, I go back to what I learned when I first jumped in as the ED of a PAC, which is polling. You know, we need to look at the polling numbers. I've asked the legislature to look at the polling numbers. If we pass a medical bill, will the chances of an amendment still pass? You know, I don't know. I think everything is so up in the air right now, and there's so much controversy in our state, and there is just fighting amongst advocates. I mean, I've seen fighting. Listen, I've been in Ohio. I've been seeing fighting among activists for a long time. But the absolute level of dysfunction and I want to say violence.
Vitriol.
Yeah, about whether Responsible Ohio should pass or not pass. Again, I go back to what I believe is most important. There has not been one organization in the state of Ohio since I've been involved who has been educating our legislature. Everybody wants to be George Washington and pass an amendment. There's no reason. If we have a bunch of individuals in the House and the Senate who say they absolutely believe in medical marijuana, then we should really look at it.
Yeah.
I have another proud moment for the state of Ohio. Our auditor, David Yost, is a very conservative Republican. I don't know why this is not front page news for marijuana reform, but David Yost, the very conservative Republican, vocally came out for medical marijuana.
Mm.
He also came out for a merit-based application process.
What do you know? Well, this is good stuff because, you know, you mentioned fighting and dysfunction, and I had to live through the 2012 Washington State debacle with, there was a huge division among activists then too, as to I-502, because they had no home grow, it had a per se DUID. People fought a lot about that. And at the time I thought, wow, once we get this done, there can't ever be another situation as bad as this. And boy, Ohio proved me wrong.
Absolutely. Because now we don't just have activists fighting. We have people from every walk of life fighting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I think at 502, I was at Hemp Fest.
Yeah,
I saw what happened and I heard and I listened and I learned. Thank you very much, everybody, for teaching me at Hemp Fest and learning about what was right and wrong with your bill. Or was it an amendment or an initiative? It was an initiative.
Yeah, statutory.
You know, it's absolutely insane right now what's happening in our state. And it's very sad mm-hmm. because, you know, I don't like to point fingers, okay? I really don't. But I can say that in the state of Ohio, between $5 and $8 million, you can run a medical amendment. That's not that much money.
Right.
When you're creating a $1 billion industry, $5 to $8 million is not a lot of money. And again, I don't want to point fingers, but it would have been really nice if we were able to address these issues with the usual drug policy reform players prior to where we're at now.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, we have newbies that have come in and figured out the Teresa gets free pot.
That's right.
And as long as that summary matches that ballot language, it can say they own the industry.
That's right. And this is something that the big time national funders and players, this blindsided them. The people that I know in these national organizations, they have their little maps and forecasts for 2016 and 2018 and 2020. Ohio wasn't on any of those maps, not even up through 2020. So they hadn't even considered putting something together. And then next thing you know, you got these Responsible Ohio groups. And you know, the cynic in me, the looking at this cynically, it's brilliant. Like if I wanted to buy an industry, this is freaking brilliant. Write an amendment, write myself in to own the industry. Boom, we're good to go. And then ride that national wave of legalization to enrich myself. It's a bastardly thing they've done here in putting this together. And it's the first time we've ever seen an investor-driven initiative. They've always been driven by the three billionaires and the activists that they were funding. Mm-hmm. And of course, we all came at it with activist point of view. Let's, you know, free the plant, free the people. These guys are all about making the money. It's a tough situation. I don't envy you being in Ohio having to deal with it.
I tell you, I make a phone call and they all know me now at the state house. They all know me. I just even have to say my first name and they know who we are, which thank goodness, because now they really can say, we really, really feel for your families. We understand what a bad position you're in. And it really is a bad position because number one, nobody should use dying children to win an amendment.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely not. And that's why the families pulled themselves out. They didn't want their children to be a part of all of this.
Yeah.
And I'm very proud of these families and what they've done. And they are working very hard to educate the legislature while their children are having 1,000 seizures a day.
Yeah. How many of these families are, you know, this close to moving to Colorado, Washington, Oregon?
Not only are they this close to moving, there's a lot of, and I'm sure you know about this, CBD companies that are really targeting our families. Our families in the state of Ohio are absolutely 100% being targeted. And if your child was ill and somebody said to you, this could stop your seizures, well, a lot of these families are giving it to their children.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, as I've learned, sometimes the CBD stuff has CBD in it. And sometimes it doesn't.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, you know, when these children get a teeny tiny bit of CBD, there's a glimmer of hope. These seizures stop for about 2 weeks. but then they come back with a vengeance. Mm-hmm. And the families have no guidance as to what they're supposed to do. They can't tell their doctor their children are taking this. All of a sudden, they went through a mail order, they got this stuff, and they're taking it. And it's really very, very sad. It's terrible for these families to have to be in this position. But again, now we have this pilot program that would take care of all catastrophically ill people, not just children. We're really looking at all catastrophically ill people.
Yeah, that's fantastic. Now, how many of these families that you're working with have had the opportunity to actually try, you know, real, you know, CBD medicine, real oils? Any of them made a trip to Colorado and find out what works? And
we have families who have traveled. Yes, we mm-hmm. have families who have moved. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't like to give too much of that away because, you know, I feel very honored to be representing these families, and we don't want anybody's children taken away because they're choosing to use natural medicine mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. use a dietary supplement, which is how the name changed. You know, you're kidding me. But you know, this is very difficult. We have a lot of families who will not cross that illegal line.
Yeah.
And, you know, I really respect them for that. I had no idea what these families were going through until I started working with them. These children are constantly in pediatric ICU. They're constantly being pumped with drugs. Some of their drugs cost $10,000 a month. Some of them have $2 million worth of bills.
Jeez.
You know, a lot of these families have more than one child, and their youngest child is the one with seizures. So you have other young children watching their brother and sister have seizures constantly.
Yeah.
You know, you know how ugly this is, yeah. Ross. You understand what it is.
And how anybody can see this and not be moved to pass something in right now, emergency situation, pass something right now, help these kids. They don't have time to wait. Teresa, we got about a minute left. Tell folks if they want to get in touch with you, if they want to find out more, and if they want to especially support you guys financially, mm-hmm. how can they help out?
Well, first thing I would like to make sure I say on the radio here before we have to go is our governor is running for president. Did I say that loud enough?
Yep.
If you cannot address the issue in the state of Ohio, how do we expect you to address it on a national level? It's time to step up to the plate. His office knows about the endocannabinoid system.
And your governor said marijuana legalization is a terrible idea yesterday.
You know, I wonder if he was talking about the initiative that, yeah, and with that or the amendment. Let's make sure this is not an initiative. This is an amendment.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
In that amendment, it says anybody over the age of 21 who transfers cannabis to anybody under the age of 21 gets increased child endangerment penalties. The reason I bring this up is because what you were just speaking about.
Yep, they did that here in Oregon as well with our initiative. The only Class C felony that remains for distribution is over 21 distributing to an under 18. And you can get a Class C felony.
But you guys are an initiative as an amendment. That's very different.
That's
you
true.
Know that.
That's true. A lot harder to deal with in that situation. Yeah. Well.
Well, again, I'm. Do you want me to?
Whoops, nope. That was my fault. Wrong button. That button. There we go. I get the closing theme up there. But Teresa, we wish you the best of luck in Ohio. I'm amazed it's even on our radar nationally to be talking about marijuana. But I think you guys will have something medical here in the next couple of years. It's inevitable.
Let's hope the next couple of months. And again, it's Ohio Families Can. Please support us. We're getting ready to start a call-in campaign. And we would love for all the listeners to join in to help show our legislature that we are serious and we are going to get this done.
That's right. You can do it. Ohio Families Can. Check it out. Teresa Daniello, thanks for being here in the studio. And folks, that's all the time we got for today. Stay tuned. The next hour, we've got an hour with Jorge Cervantes. That's right. A whole hour on cultivation information coming up next here on the Russ Belville Show. For Teresa Daniello, I'm Radical Russ from beautiful legal Potland, Oregon at Rolla J Studios. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.